This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF, news, talk, traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us this afternoon. I'm Jason Kong, and I have the pleasure of being here today with, once again, Betsy Barton from Transitions Life Care. She's the Senior Associate for Community Engagement. Betsy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you, Jason?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited for the show today, and we've got a wonderful guest, you know, one of our own at Transitions Life Care. We've got Dawn with us, Dawn Kelsey. She is a nurse practitioner, and she is also the Associate Director of Education at Transitions Life Care. Dawn, thank you so much for being here with us
today. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Well, Betsy, the topic of today's show is going to center around pain management, and we're going to get into some facts and some myths and some common misconceptions because, you know, this is something that, especially in your world, I'm sure you get a lot of kind of half-truths or misconceptions when it comes to pain management.
That is totally right, Jason. And, you know, what I see out in the community is there are often people who are suffering needlessly. And so I think it would be, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about how folks can address pain and not just, you know, steel themselves and deal with it. So, you know, I know my own mom, she didn't want to take Tylenol because she didn't want to get addicted. So I think we have a lot of information out there that you can put into the pot here. So why don't we start off by just give us a little bit of the lay of the land about what pain management often looks like in this country, and then we'll get into some common myths and misperceptions.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a loaded question, and I would like to start with let's start with understanding serious illness and as it progresses into end of life, so our listeners can understand that we're not referring to just pain in general, like hip pain that may be associated with osteoarthritis or, you know, you stumped your toe. We are not referencing that type of pain, but we're referencing pain that is related to individuals that are living with a serious illness and potentially has progressed to terminal illness. Mm. And so when you ask about the lay of the land, we know that there's been a lot of changes as it relates to how pain is managed in the United States, particularly towards the opiate crisis. So, you know, a few years ago, you were able to leave the emergency room with a 30-day supply of opiates. And now you're unable to do that because the policies have been put in place where providers are unable to prescribe at that level and that many, you know, that level of pain management, and that patients now have to be really assessed and managed when it comes to pain. And we definitely understand that because there is an opiate crisis that continues in our country and abroad. So because of those particular policies, it really, that's why we need to be able to separate when we talk about pain in general and pain as it relates to serious illness. Mm-hmm. Because pain as it relates to serious illness, terminal illness, end of life pain is a different type of pain. And it needs to be managed very differently than the pain of a patient that is experiencing hip pain, leg pain, headaches, or, you know, any other type of pain. And so in serious illness and end of life world, you know, we tend to, our goal is comfort. Mm-hmm. So the main goal is comfort. Now we do take into account patients that may have a history of substance abuse. We do take into account the patient that may not be able to tolerate different medications, particularly opiates. So we do, that's part of the assessment. That's part of just good medicine. However, we also aim towards the comfort of the individual.
Okay. So a lot of people think that death is always painful. Do you find that to be the case?
That is not always the case. Mm. We know that pain in a patient that's living with a terminal illness, we know that pain typically occurs about 2 years prior to a patient making that transition. It increases about 4 months prior to when that patient transitions. However, pain is not always a part of the death process. And we know that, you know, research has shown us that when patients, when asked what matters most at the end of life, mm-hmm. pain is one of them. They want to be pain-free. There's some diagnosis that will lean towards pain. One is cancer. So 80% of patients that are living with cancer are experiencing cancer at end of life will experience pain. But there's a whole lot of other diagnoses where those patients typically do not experience that level of pain. Now, we also have to add in this equation the patient that is in the bed most of the time. So just laying in the bed alone without, you know, with minimal repositioning, things like that, that causes pain. The patient that is unable to get up or move around, you know, they may be able to transfer from a bed to a chair, they still may experience some level of pain or discomfort, but it may not be related to the dying process. It's just related to just laying in a bed, you know.
Oh, that's so interesting. And I bet, you know, most of our listeners can identify with that. If you've, you know, you were really tired and
that
you just slept too long. A lot of us wake up with a crick in the neck mm-hmm. or just, you know, when we have the flu and then we're finally up and about noticing.
Yeah, things like that does not change at end of life. So, mm-hmm. All pain is not directly related to the terminal illness or the end of life or the dying process. It's just, like you said, we sleep in the bed too long, your hip hurts. And so our patients experience the same thing.
Okay. And then on the other end, sometimes you have patients who have no pain, no physical pain at all, even though they're going through the dying process.
And I'm glad you mentioned physical pain, because I think it is important to note that we are four-dimensional. And so when we speak of the four dimensions, physical happens to be one of them, but we also have the spiritual, the social, and the psychological. And so we oftentimes lean towards the physical part of pain, but it's important to note that patients that are experiencing anxiety, patients that are experiencing a spiritual disconnect or whatever that may look like for them, a patient that may be experiencing social disconnect from family, from the outside world, from things that they are used to doing, that can manifest into physical pain. So, you know, when we think about pain, I just want us to understand that it may not always be that physical pain, like something is literally hurting, my arm hurt, my neck hurt, my leg hurts. It could be associated with another dimension of pain.
Mm. I'm so glad you're mentioning that, because often people that I've talked to who have chronic illnesses, they come back from the doctor and they said it's all in my head.
Yeah.
So they're hearing it as an attack mm-hmm. rather than somebody acknowledging, a provider acknowledging pain can come from any of these four
Correct.
Dimensions, and it's a big pot. It looks different for every single person, right?
Correct.
Yeah, we think there's a pill for all those forms, and there's not. It every situation is unique and requires different lenses to view it through. We're having a really great conversation. We've got some wonderful folks in the studio. Dawn Kelsey, she's a nurse practitioner and associate director of education at Transitions Life Care, as well as Betsy Barton, senior associate for community engagement at Transitions Life Care. And we're going to continue our conversation surrounding pain management and the facts and myths related to pain management right after this. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Hey, if you want to learn more about Transitions Life Care, be sure to go online to transitionslifecare.org, transitionslifecare.org. I am Jason Kong here with Betsy Barton. She is senior associate for community engagement at Transitions Life Care, and we're speaking with Dawn Kelsey. She is a nurse practitioner and associate director of education at Transitions Life Care, and we are having a conversation related to pain management and what is fact and what is myth, because there are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to pain management. And Betsy, I think we want to start out this segment talking about, you know, one of the common things associated with pain management, and those are drugs, prescription drugs.
That's right. And I would say let's just dive right in and talk about morphine, because we work at Transitions Life Care, so we work with folks who are seriously ill. And I loved hearing you talk about this. You have such a fount of knowledge about it. But so let's start with morphine. A lot of times people think, I mean, I have actually heard people say, oh, hospice, that's where you go to get the shot. Oh, my goodness, I wish I could just have a private conversation with every single person in this country and knock that myth down. But let's start with you talking about what is the role of morphine? How is that helpful when someone has a serious illness or is facing the end of their life?
Absolutely. We have to talk about morphine because in my experience in hospice and serving hospice patients and families, that's probably the number one comment, question, and misconception as it relates to caring for patients at end of life. A lot of people are very hesitant in starting morphine. A lot of people don't want to start morphine because of what they have heard or and I will say, experiences. So one myth that we find is that morphine kills, or morphine shortens the life of an individual. Mm-hmm. And so let's start there. So let's start with that with that one. Now, if you look at the PI of any of the opiates, and I'm going to name it as an opiate because in this class of drugs that we name opiates, that includes morphine, oxycodone, Dilaudid, methadone, fentanyl patches, and I'm going to put in this class tramadol because tramadol is a one step, one chemical below a morphine. I'm also going to put in this class Percocet because that is a highly used drug. What I want people to understand is that Percocet is Tylenol and oxycodone. That makes the drug Percocet. Mm. So when folks ask, they don't want morphine, but they're on Percocet, or they have been on Percocet, they've already had morphine because our Dilaudids chemically break down to the simplest form, which is morphine in the body once it enters the body. So if you've been on Percocet or Vicodin, you've been on morphine. So you can tolerate morphine.
I bet most people do not know that.
So that's why I wanted to kind of add that piece to it, because it's important for people to know what they are taking. And so, but going back to the question of does it kill, the PI, the prescribing thing, of all of the drugs actually says that it decreases the respiratory effort of a patient. But that's all of them. And if you look in the PI of just about any drug that we take, it says the same thing, because that is what was done. That happened in a clinical trial to somebody somewhere when the drug, before the drug hit FDA. And so they have to report that. Now, we're dealing with patients of serious illness, terminal illness, and at end of life. What research has found is that those patients want to die. They don't want, the body doesn't want to die in a painful state. So when we're able to put that patient in a more comfortable state, usually by the use of an opiate, morphine, oxycodone, whichever, then the patient tends to die. And it may appear that the patient dies quicker, but the patient probably would have died anyway in that time. They just didn't want to die in a very painful or chaotic state.
Okay.
So when you place them in a comfortable state, then it appears to families, oh, they died, and it's negatively associated with the morphine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me see if I'm getting this right from a lay perspective. It allows the body to just relax.
Correct.
Into what is happening anyway, and takes away the effort and maybe even the fear, could we say?
Absolutely.
So what we might see in somebody laboring to breathe and struggling for each breath, mm-hmm. and they get even just the tiniest bit morphine, right? The tiniest bit.
Tiny bit.
The body relaxes. They're more breathing more easily. They're getting more air, right?
That is correct.
Because they can actually take a full breath instead of that shallow
breathing.
You know, effortful breathing that isn't as efficient.
And I'm glad you mentioned about the breathing, because the important thing to note as well is that morphine has three uses. So we tend to think of morphine as a pain for pain management, and it is. It does a wonderful job in pain management, but it's also utilized for a patient that is experiencing respiratory dysfunction, respiratory problems. So your COPD patient, mm-hmm. your patient that's living with lung cancer, your patient that's living with pulmonary fibrosis, your patient that's living with ALS is having struggling that struggles to breathe, that's having those breathing problems, and agitation. So your patient that is experiencing the agitation, the restlessness, morphine manages all three of those symptoms. That's why it is widely used at end of life and with the terminal illness patients. When you speak about misconceptions and myths, another one is I think people have this fear of being addicted.
Mm.
And so in end of life, the morphine that is used is typically not the IV or the pill. So we use a liquid concentrated version of morphine that is called Roxanol.
Okay.
And so when you mentioned a very small amount, it is liquid. So it's the actual dosage, starting dosage is 0.25 milliliters, which is a very small amount of drug. But what that does is that it only stays in the body for about 2 hours.
Really?
And then the kidneys, we urinate it out. The kidneys get rid of it. So it doesn't stack in the body, it's dosed where the body has time to get rid of it. So it kind of does what it needs to do, decreases the pain, calms the patient, calms the agitation, and then when it's time to take it again, the patient is actually starting from ground zero.
Interesting. And it's administered under the tongue, right?
It is administered in the cheek area. Okay. You want to get it in the oral cavity, but the specific area is in the cheek area.
Okay. All right. So 2 hours. So even if somebody is reluctant to have a family member take morphine, within 2 hours,
it's
they
gone.
Can see, well, how did it go? Okay, we're going to do that again. We like what we saw. Or, no, we're going to change and get
Absolutely.
A different strategy.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this is a fascinating conversation. I learned more about morphine in the last 10 minutes than I have probably my whole life. This is a great conversation that we're having with Dawn Kelsey. She's a nurse practitioner and associate director of education at Transitions Life Care. We've got Betsy Barton in the studio as well, senior associate for community engagement at Transitions Life Care. We're going to continue our conversation on pain management and facts and myths related to it right after this. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us this afternoon. I'm Jason Kong here in the studio with Betsy Barton, Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care. And our guest is Dawn Kelsey. She is a nurse practitioner and the Associate Director of Education at Transitions Life Care. And we've been talking today all about pain management. It has been such an enlightening conversation with Dawn, and we've been covering facts and myths related to pain management. And Betsy, we've covered a lot of ground in terms of, you know, pain that is experienced, you know, different levels of pain, the 4D ways that we can experience pain. We've covered drugs, morphine, and we now want to get into a conversation centered around those who may have issues with substances and how that can relate to pain management. Because, you know, when we tend to think about this, we think about just some person who has no issues at all and is in an end-of-life situation, but there are different circumstances for everyone. And again, this is an area where we've got a lot of kind of just half-truths and things where we may just be guessing at.
What a great segue, Jason. We all have issues, right? and substance abuse is a huge issue in this country right now. So let's talk about that a little bit. If someone has a history of substance use or abuse, does that mean their family should advocate that they never get morphine? You know, does that mean that they're not going to want morphine? Tell us a little bit about how, and not just morphine, but all the medications that are in that family. Tell us how that fits into someone having a history of substance use.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm glad it was mentioned earlier that we all have issues. and those issues don't stop at end of life. I mean, we care for those patients at end of life, at terminal illness, at serious illness, the same way that we would care for them if they did not have a terminal illness. And so I say that to say that that assessment is made at the initial contact with that patient and families. So when we initially, and I'm speaking in reference to hospice care, so when our hospice nurses and social workers go out, we make that initial assessment as to, is there a history of substance abuse? And what was that? And it's important to know is when was that? Because it could have been 30 years ago. And so we definitely are not going to deny someone the care, the comfort that they will need because of a substance abuse and the patient has been cleared or been, you know, drug free for 20 and 30 years. But I will add that even if it was last year, we still are not going to deny that patient the comfort and the care that they need at this point of their, in their journey. So we do an initial assessment. We understand, we get a full understanding of what that looks like, in the home, who is in the home. We do a home assessment, who is responsible for that patient. Does that individual have or has had a history of substance abuse? Once all of that is established, depending on what is gathered from that, initial assessment, things that we put in place can be a lockbox. So there's a lockbox in some folks' homes where our nurses only have access to, so the nurses can go out and they can portion out as many, you know, pills or medications that the patient may need. In the case of the use of Roxanol that we spoke of earlier, since it is liquid, it's drawn up in a syringe, so we can actually put 0.25 ml or whatever the dosage is in a syringe. And so if we know that that patient is going to use five dosage for a day, then there will be five syringes that's laid out for a 24-hour period. So we do, you know, we are very intentional about understanding the history, but also providing that care and the appropriate management to those patients.
Great. That's really helpful. And for our listeners, I just want to back up a little bit and explain a couple of things. One, most people might not know that most of the care that Transitions Life Care provides is in people's homes or whatever they call home. So when you're talking about in people's houses, we're not talking about somebody going to a facility, although
Correct.
We do have a wonderful inpatient facility. Most of our folks are right there wherever they call home, whether that's their home or their apartment or maybe even their room in a skilled nursing facility, right?
And even in their daughter's home, you know, it's even in their wherever they call home, assisted living, independent living, skilled nursing facilities, family care homes, and I will add homeless shelters, shelters in general. Those places are where people call home, and so that is where we will provide the care that is needed for those patients.
Great. I think it's so important to say that out loud sometimes because people will say, like, okay, when do I go? It's like, no, you're not going anywhere. Yeah. You're going to stay. You're going to have the same view outside of your window with your bird feeder and your beloved whatever outside your window. And the other thing I wanted to clarify is you're not using the word, but you're talking about a comfort kit. You're talking about that some people might be surprised. What? You give people medications to deliver at home? But I love how you're describing. It's really like the medications I get for my cat.
Correct.
They don't let me make a mistake. They have already preloaded the syringe for me.
That's correct.
And I get a little stack of them. So it's, you know, for lack of a better word, idiot proof. There's
right.
an engineering control about that. And so tell us a little bit about the comfort kit. What else, when someone is caring for a family member or a loved one who has is looking at the end, toward the end of their life, what's a comfort kit? What do we send home with them?
Sure. So a comfort kit is mailed to the patient's home around 24 hours after they are admitted into hospice care. That comfort kit has about 8 drugs in there. Those 8 drugs include, one includes morphine, unless the patient has an allergy to morphine. So if a patient has an allergy to morphine or any other opiates, morphine will not be in that comfort kit. The other things that are in there are things to help, medications that help to manage anxiety, respiratory issues, you know, shortness of breath, things like that, constipation, agitation. So we have about 8 drugs that are included in that comfort kit. And as you say, idiot proof, they are child proof. So that the patients and families understand, one, what the medications are, how they are used. They are color coded. So if you call in Transitions Life Care is 24 hours. So if you happen to call in at 3:00 in the morning and your loved one is needing a medications, we will say, get the one with the red sticker or get the one with the green sticker. And so people don't have to really read, you know, what drug they are getting. And our nurses actually put the stickers on those comfort kit, but the comfort kit is there for management for those patients, you know, right there in the home. So no one has to go to the drugstore to get those drugs.
Okay, that's awesome. Thank you so much for explaining that.
Very well thought out process. We are speaking with Dewan Kelsey. She's a nurse practitioner and Associate Director of Education at Transitions Life Care. We've got Betsy Barton in the studio as well, Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care. We are talking about all things related to pain management and going through some facts and myths related to pain management. And we're going to continue this conversation right after this. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News Talk.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic. I'm Jason Kong here with Betsy Barton, Senior Associate for Community Engagement at Transitions Life Care, and we are joined in the studio today by Dewan Kelsey. She's a nurse practitioner and Associate Director of Education at Transitions Life Care, and we've had such a fascinating conversation related to pain management and facts and myths surrounding it, and we've got one more segment here with Dewan, and we've got so much to get to, Betsy, so let's get back to it.
Okay, wonderful. So I have so many things to ask you, Dewan, but here's one that I want to ask you because I think you could really help people out there in the listening audience. Tell me more about, besides morphine, what other pain management strategies does someone like you, a nurse practitioner in this field, have in your toolbox?
In this field of work, it's funny because sometimes we're very limited, because we understand that the management at end of life is different from the management of a patient that's just living with, that may just be experiencing pain from other ways. And so outside of the morphines, there are, you know, your oxycodones, and this is your opiate classes, your oxycodones, your methadone is used, fentanyl may be used in certain cases. So those are, you know, what we have. I want to add that, you know, we use those, and we use those very liberally, and meaning that our goal is comfort. Our goal is the care and the comfort of our patients at end of life. So when we ask to give that dose of medications, that dose has been, that dose is prescribed for that level of comfort. So oftentimes we see patients just want to give a little bit or give half of the dose. And what happens is that you're not going to achieve your pain management that you would. That's where when we were talking about myths and mm-hmm. misconceptions, is that you have to be able to give the appropriate dose. Those doses are not just pulled from a hat. Those doses are pulled from research that says this particular dosage helps to manage this patient. But I will say, in addition to the opiates, you know, the other thing that can be used when we look at the four dimensions is we look at agitation medication. So oftentimes we're using drugs like Ativan, lorazepam is the other name, Xanax, diazepam is the other name for those for those drugs. So we're looking at those drugs can help as well. Steroids can be used for a short term, depending on what that patient may be experiencing. And then we also have some antidepressants that can be used for pain management as well. So there's, you know, we have different tools in our toolboxes. Mm-hmm. It's just really patient dependent.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that folks don't know about palliative care, that, you know, often there's a misperception that palliative care is only for people at the end of life, which is so completely not true. But that's a whole different radio show, isn't it?
Right.
but, you know, palliative care providers might have more tricks up their sleeve than a primary care doctor. Is that right?
Well, what happens in palliative care, I think it's important for us to kind of define palliative care, because there may be people that may not be familiar with palliative care. So when we speak about palliative care, it is very different from hospice. So they are not interchangeable. Mm-hmm. So I want to just add that piece, is they those are two separate medical models. But in palliative care, we're typically talking about pain management or symptom management. I hate to only use pain, because there are many other symptoms that people experience. So we're looking at symptom management. We're looking at advanced care planning. We're looking at that stage of a patient's journey. When we talk about serious illness versus terminal illness, when that patient advances into that serious illness phase, palliative care is there to provide the symptom management and to provide those conversations that folks we know may not have had those conversations when it's in terms of advanced care planning. Yeah. Palliative care actually continues in the hospice realm. It's just the medical model changes, but the context of palliative care continues, because we're still caring for those patients and managing their symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thanks so much for that. That explanation. well, let's talk a little bit about, when we're talking about all these different, your large toolkit of pain management strategies, is it the same for every person in the United States, or are there, do different groups of people in the United States have challenges that others don't? I mean, we live in a culture that has huge health inequalities, and some of us have always been aware of this, and some of us became more aware of it, say, during the COVID pandemic, when Black and African American and Latino people were often dying at higher rates than the population at large.
Correct. And this is a whole different we can have a whole another segment on this, but I'm glad that you mentioned this, because this actually needs to be talked about more and more, and that there's not one pill that fits everybody. And so when we're doing this work, and not just in the line of end of life or serious illness, any work, it is important to be culturally sensitive. And how do we do that? We ask people. We understand the population in which we're dealing with. We understand their history. We're understanding their experiences. And we also understand that even when it comes to particular medications, it may or may not work in that population of people. And so we have to be aware of that, and we have to respect that and judge ourselves accordingly. So it's interesting that you mentioned the health inequality. One thing that pops in my mind is the sickle cell anemia patient. And those are oftentimes African-American patients, younger patients, who we know that disease creates a ton of pain, just pain. But we also know that they are less likely to receive the appropriate pain management that is truly related to the sickle cell disease. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of spills over oftentimes even at the end of life, because we don't want to, there's a certain segment that may not want to treat those patients because they think they are drug seeking. And so we see this across, you know, we see this across all lines of the health inequalities. But I think that is, well, I know that it is important that we do our fair diligence in supporting these individuals, but also just understanding communities at a whole and understanding that there's not one way for everybody. And we have to be open and respectful to the fact that this community may do it this way and this community may do it that way. The goal is the care of people, however that may look like, not how Dwan thinks it should look.
Mm-hmm. I love how that fits exactly into the Transitions Life Care mission of providing the right care at the right time.
Correct.
You know, what I'm hearing from you is that we don't make assumptions about people.
We treat
the person in front of us, listening to what is going on with them and treating those symptoms. So that's, I think that can't be said out loud too many times.
Correct.
You know, I mean, there was a study many years ago about even just a simple situation, young boys, 12-year-old-ish boys who had a femur fracture, which is very painful universally, and they did a study about who got pain medication in the emergency department of this group of young pre-adolescent boys who had a femur fracture, and the white kids got more pain medication. So,
yeah, we have a lot of work to do. We still, in 2024, 2025, we still have a lot of work to do.
Okay. Well, I know we got to wrap up. I want to keep talking, but I got one more question for you, and that is, what would you tell somebody who has a family member with a serious illness who's in pain? What's the most important takeaway that you want them to have?
They do not have to be in pain. That doesn't have to be a part of their journey. It doesn't have to be a part of the story. We have medications that can help with pain. We know that pain is a symptom, but we also know that patients' quality of life diminishes with pain. And so what that patient could do, has the potential to do, is diminished and diluted when they're in a significant amount of pain. That patient does not have to be in pain. And if there's a hesitancy of medications, particularly opiates, let's have that discussion and let's get to the bottom as to where does that come from? Where is the fear? Because it is a fear. I think the underlying issue is fear. So let's have that open discussion about the fear.
I couldn't say it any better, Dwan. I think that's a perfect note to end on.
That is the perfect note to end on. Dwan, we could have a conversation with you for several more hours. Unfortunately, we are out of time for today. I want to thank Dwan Kelsey so much for coming on the program, nurse practitioner and associate director of education at Transitions Life Care. Special thanks to Betsy Barton for directing the conversation today. Betsy is the senior associate for community engagement at Transitions Life Care. And if you want to find more information about Transitions Life Care, you can go online to transitionslifecare.org. It is such a wonderful resource. There's a lot of information available for you, contact information, ways that you can engage, all online at transitionslifecare.org.
aging.org. That's going to do it for us today. I'm Jason Kong, thanking you so much for listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, 107.5, and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.